The NBA playoffs are heating up, and so is the action at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NBA. DraftKings brings you same-game parlays, live betting, odds boosts, and so much more. You can download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now and use code VOXMMA. That's code VOXMMA for new customers to get 150 in bonus bets when you bet just $5. Only on DraftKings. The crown is yours.
Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Or in West Virginia, visit 1-800-GAMBLER.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly. On behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort in Kansas, 21 and over, age varies by jurisdiction. Void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.co/bball for eligibility and deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources.
Hey, this is Scott Galloway, author, professor, entrepreneur, and most importantly, host of the Prop G podcast. We got a special series running on right now called The Future of Work, where I answer all your questions on, surprise, the future of work. Questions including, what are we missing when we work remotely? Or how do we handle work-life balance when a major opportunity comes knocking? From the provocative to the technical, we're offering insights you won't want to miss. So tune in to The Future of Work, a Prop G Pod special sponsored by Canva. You can find it on the Prop G Pod wherever you get your podcasts.
You're listening to the Vox Media Podcast Network.
All right, we are live, everybody, following a very entertaining UFC Vegas 16 event that took a few hits before things got underway, but it all wrapped up with Marvin Vettori picking up the biggest win of his career over Jack Hermansson. As we welcome you to the UFC Vegas 16 post-fight show live here on MMAfighting.com. Thank you for joining us. We're here to discuss this event with all of you, so get those questions in there, ladies and gentlemen, and we will get to them for sure. I am Mike Heck, being joined by the Prince of Positivity himself, Alex Kaylee, as well as producer extraordinaire, E. Casey Lydon. How are you, gentlemen? So what an awkward start to this thing. We're only a minute in.
That's how we like it. That's how we like it.
Oh, man. But AK, we had ourselves an event that had some bumps in the road, especially with like 2 to 3 hours to go. But those left on the card, they were all ready to go. They were fired up and they delivered some fun fights and some big performances out there. So your thoughts on the event overall tonight before we get into the top couple of fights and the fan questions?
Yeah, it was a solid show. It was a solid show. I don't think there was a bad fight on the night. Again, unless you consider, you know, some of the fights that may end too quickly as being, you know, a lackluster. But I think most people, when there's a fast finish, feel pretty good about it. So yeah, solid card. I'm not gonna say it was like an amazing card, but given what they had to deal with, again, yeah, a few fights dropping off, some really good ones too. You know, Evloev and Landwehr was one a lot of people were looking forward to. I thought Montana De La Rosa and Tyler Santos was a really intriguing fight as well. So to lose those and still put together a compelling card was really great. I wish there was a way, you know, an 8-fight card could still somehow end before 1 in the morning, or I guess in about 15 minutes ago, maybe 12:45. But I understand there's broadcasting necessities that have to be acknowledged. So solid card. I'm not going out, you know, I'm not going to say like, oh, they blew it out of the water with this 8-fight card. No, it's good. Good stuff. And congrats to everyone who performed tonight.
Casey, what did you think? Were you entertained tonight?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Good entertainment tonight. It's just too late. It's just, these cards are just going way too late. And I feel like, at the beginning of the ESPN era, we were all like, ESPN, the cards are so much better paced. But now I feel like we're kind of getting back to the FS1 era where, like, you know, just these cards just seem to never end. Not because they're bad fights, it's just there's just a lot of fights, you know, late at night and just Saturday after Saturday. But fights, but just the fights themselves, good fights, very entertaining. Like Alex said, not a crappy one, just good fights. Yeah.
Before we start breaking down the main event, because the bonuses, I don't believe, have been released yet. AK, we have any predictions here for the bonuses tonight?
I, Flight of the Night, pretty obvious. Got to be in the main event. Knockout of the Night, Jordan Levitt's definitely going to get one. That slam, we'll talk about more later, I'm sure, but one of the best knockouts of the year. And then the other performance bonus is a tough one. This is one of those nights weekend where, you know, and I'm a broken record, I say this all the time, just give $50,000 bonuses to everyone who got a finish. That's the way it should work in these situations. They're not going to do that, of course. So my other one would go to, man, I really liked Benitez's knee. That's who I would give it to. I think they might just go with the co-main event and then Jamal Hill.
Yeah, I think that's the answer, but we'll see what happens. Casey, your pick?
Teporia. I didn't mention Teporia. I'm sorry.
obvious fight of the night, the main event. Performance, Jamal Hill. And the other performance, I'm going to give it to Teporia. Sorry, Mr. Levitt. Not giving the Levitt. Sorry. We'll talk about Matt Wyman later, and if Matt Wyman should have even been in a UFC cage tonight.
Sure.
But and that's not Jordan Levitt's fault, but the guy across from you does matter.
Let's talk about this main event before the bonuses come out. We'll let you know as soon as they do. But we saw AK Marvin Vettori, who was somewhat disappointed in his performance after the fact, gets a 4-1 win on the scorecards. We thought the tides may have turned in the third round heading into round four, but Vettori just kind of woke back up. Rafael Cordeiro, A+ in the corner tonight. Vettori comes through and gets it done. What did you make of Marvin Vittori's career-changing victory tonight?
I was wondering, you know, first of all, I hate myself because on the preview show, I picked Vettori. And then I later changed my official pick. I think people should take my written predictions that are published on the site as my final pick. I did change over to Hermanson. I don't know if it was one of you guys that convinced me, but I thought you picked Vettori as well. But I don't know. I hate myself for changing the pick because everything I thought the Vettori was, he showed, you know, a top shelf striker, really good athlete. He's a high level athlete of 185 for sure. And I'm not saying that's the reason he won. I'm saying that's one of the assets that's kind of helps him avoid some dangerous situations and why he's so quick. Great chin, obviously, young guy, prime of his career, can take a lot of hits because Hermanson was headhunting in the last couple of rounds there. And Vettori could take it and still stick with his game plan and still be consistent with his offense. So I think he really showed a lot. He's going to take a top five spot. That's where Hermanson was heading into the night, and he deserves it.
Is he going to take a top five spot, Casey? I think he's going to get a big leap. I don't know if you could just insert him right into like the number four, number five spot. I mean, it was a big win over a ranked guy, no doubt about it. Opportunity knocked and he answered it. But Tuesday morning, do you think he's going to be ranked number five or even better than that?
No, I don't have him. I don't have him in my top five. I thought Hermanson was a little overvalued ranking wise. But I picked Hermanson coming into this. So, but I just didn't think that I didn't think Hermanson was a top five fighter either. But no, I don't think so. Who do we have? We have Izzy counts as he doesn't count as one because he's the champ. So we have Whitaker. Who we have? Whitaker, Cannonier,
Costa, Cannonier.
Cannonier.
Sorry.
Romero is still ranked right now.
So well, we would take him out.
Maybe if Romero out of the rankings, maybe he might make top five, actually. Yeah, with Romero out of the rankings. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Do you put him above Darren Till and Derek Brunson? Sure. And
ooh, Derek Brunson. I forgot about Mr. Brunson. I wouldn't, actually. I think all those are kind of interchangeable of a plus or two. You know, like if you put someone number six, you could probably justifiably put him at four. But I think the top three or four, I guess, are pretty settled. Cannonier, Costa, Whitaker. Who am I missing?
Hermanson's four right now.
No.
I don't know. Maybe he does get up there. Process of elimination.
Yeah.
I put him in there.
Yeah, I forgot about Romero because you got to take Romero out of it. Yeah, so that does kind of change things up.
Which is so wild.
Yeah,
that's just so wild.
I like how we're just casually saying, oh, by the way, Romero's no longer in the rankings. Like, yeah.
Hey, Romero got the Liz Carmouche treatment. You lose a stinker title fight and you're done.
So he'd also, crazy. I think, won one fight in this last like four appearances.
Oh, we're gonna do that.
Okay. I know, and those don't tell the story. Same because I made the same argument for Juicy Formiga, who lost three straight fights, and I was still like, it's crazy to cut this guy. So we just lost in the last month two top five guys in their divisions. Maybe Formiga was out of the top five by then, but Formiga was still top 10. We lost top 10 to flyweight and we lost top five middleweight. That's crazy. That's real crazy.
Yeah. And no one creates more excitement than Yoel Romero. Like if he lost 15 right. fights in a row,
yeah.
If Yoel Romero is booked against anybody, people are going to get excited about it. That's just who he is. Yeah. They just want to see
Formiga, people want to say, okay, he's not the most exciting flyweight. I go like, sure, I could agree with that. If that's a reason to cut him, again, I don't think that is reason. I think he's still competitive, but you could say that. Romero, win or lose, he's just someone people want to watch. He's someone that you can try and casual viewership with. You show them a couple of his highlights, show what he looks like. You'll have Uncle Pete calling in saying, how do I order this pay-per-view? How do I get ESPN Plus up here? So
he's one of the few fighters. You could sell pay-per-view just on him working out. Just, hey, do some burpees, Mr. Romero. Here's my $60.
Yeah, and then say, this man is 43 years old.
Supposedly. And who knows how old he really is? He could be 55. I don't know.
I can't believe he's not in the UFC anymore.
Rumor is he's human. Amazing. I don't even know. I'm not even
sure. Yeah. We'll see about that. Any more sources?
Casey, what did you think of the fight, Casey? Because before we hit record, you had some interesting thoughts on not just Vettori's performance, but Hermanson's performance and kind of what you saw in the aftermath with him walking around. What did you think of the performance and, you know, just the fight overall? I mean, it was a great fight, but you had some things that were on your mind about it.
My big thing was like, just why wasn't her? I think even Felder or Cruz said this, like, why isn't Hermanson throwing any kicks? Why is he not throwing any head kicks? Like the way Marvin just had his right hand, or was it his left? He had his left hand really low. It's like he was just open for head kicks, and it's not and if he throws a head kick and he gets taken down, that's fine for Hermanson. I think he'd be comfortable with that. But then as soon as you saw the fight ended, like all that adrenaline just goes, and you and Hermanson started feeling that pain, and he started getting that immediate limp. So I was like, oh, okay, which I think I was talking actually to my Muay Thai coach, and I think early in the first or second round, Hermanson threw a leg kick, and Vettori checked it amazingly. It was a great check, and I think that check just wrecked Hermanson's leg. So if anyone has trained Muay Thai and you go shin to shin and someone checks you perfectly, it is so incredibly painful. And luckily, it didn't break his leg, like a certain very famous middleweight leg got broken off a leg check. But I was just real I think it really changed the game for Hermanson, because he was just, I think, just boxing for the last three or four rounds with Vettori. And I was like, what are you doing, man? Like you're doing okay, but this isn't how you're going to win the fight. So I was just kind of shocked, but great Vettori, man. He's just getting better. I mean, bottom line. I mean, coming into this fight, I thought Hermanson was going to win it. But now watching the fight, Vettori's just a better fighter. He's just improved. And the fighter I thought Vettori was is no longer. And now we just have a better version of him out there.
Excuse me. So Marvin Vettori is going to get his win money, the show money, and 50 Gs. Because the bonuses are out. Fight of the night, of course, goes to the main event. Performances of the night, Mowgli Benitez and Jordan Leavitt.
Yeah.
$50,000.
Not too surprising. Topuria, again, really would have been probably another candidate. That KO, again, it was 6 hours ago now, so no one remembers it. But holy cow, this guy's good.
It was so technical. it was beautiful. Just beautiful.
He's a grappler. He's supposed to be, people are talking about, he's a grappling specialist. And it's like, holy crap, he came in throwing fire.
And technical, it wasn't just sloppy. Dang. You know, it was high level striking, very very impressive. Is he a 45er or a 35er? I'm sorry, what is he?
He's 45er.
45er, okay.
Throw him to the top 20 right now. Like I don't want to wait.
Absolutely,
kind of like throw him right to the top 20.
Yeah,
I suggested Andre Feely. People were excited about that. I think that's perfect matchmaking at this point.
I think you can put him against anyone. Honestly, I think Feely's awesome against anybody, but yeah, I want to see him a name, yeah.
Sure. AK, I'm not going to ask you this because we're going to save that. We're going to make the listeners wait for the podcast to come out. But Marvin Vettori in his dirty language filled post-fight interview with John Anik, so much language, in fact, that we didn't even hear Marvin Vettori say who he was calling out. John Anik, the consummate professional, just doing the darn thing and repeating it. So we all got to know who he was calling out. He calls out Paulo Costa. What do you think of that? Is that how you would do it, or do you have somebody else in mind? Not you.
I did hear something like Bohacinha. I swear I thought I heard Bohacinha, but thank you for John Anik.
Yes, Anik is the man. But Casey, what do you think? Do you like that fight?
Yeah, I like the fight. Actually, right before we came on, I was like, oh man, I want to see Vettori versus Romero. I think that's the fight to make, but yeah, here we are.
Too soon.
Yeah, I know. No, we're... Whoever is fighting Costa next, that's a bit of a sweepstakes in a sense that you can maybe just need to beat, if you beat Costa, then you're like, look, I beat this guy. I should be fighting for the title next. So I think if Vettori wants the quickest road to the title, probably beating Costa is fighting Costa is the way to go. So it's a great call out.
Yeah, it was a good call. And AK and I will give our opinions on that on to the next one. So make sure you tweet us if you have. We have some suggestions already coming in on the Twitter. Oh, so yeah. Leave yours. He's at Alexander Kaylee. I am at MikeHeck_JR. And we will go from there. We'll read them out on to the next one. But before we get to the listener questions, I do want to touch on the co-main event. Jamahal Hill stops Ovince St. Preux in the second round. AK, you were under the impression that this fight was maybe a bridge too far for one Jamahal Hill. It was a very interesting first round, but Hill got real, real comfortable in the second. Hurts and then eventually stops the wily veteran in OSP. Props to Jason Herzog stepping in there with a perfect stoppage to end the fight. But now that you've seen it, AK, and you kind of have to eat your words here, your thoughts on Jamahal Hill's performance and where he stands now at 205. Are you convinced that this guy has a really high ceiling and could do some damage at 205?
I hate picking fights so much. I actually picked nine fights wrong tonight, and there were eight fights, so I don't know how I did it, but I went 0-9 tonight. Really amazing stuff. Don't know how I did it. It's incredible work. Well, Michael, what was the question? I'm sorry. I'm pitying myself. What was the question?
Jamahal Hill, your thoughts on Jamahal Hill after that win?
I mean, first of all, we know he should be 3-0 in the UFC. His last knockout was also very impressive against Abreu, and it was tossed out because of, that damn devil's lettuce. That damn devil's lettuce is just ruining careers. So, if only he could have stayed away from that seductive vegetable. I don't know. But no, he should be. Look, that's bullcrap. He should be 2-0 in the UFC. He should be 8-0 in his career, and he should have two straight UFC knockouts, two very impressive knockouts. He looks so good. He looks so good. There's a lot of, I'm sure, again, there's people out there who, including myself, who are going to say, oh, why didn't OSP do this? Why didn't he try and get the fight to the ground? Things like that. But again, I think when you're fighting a guy like Hill with his agility and the way he was actually really good at maintaining range, which is really impressive because OSP is a good fighter from range. So for him to beat him at his own game, and then also just kind of assert himself the way he did, man, it's why you see people talking about this guy as a top contender and someone who's really going to fly up the rankings fast. We talk about some of the, like Topuria flying up fast. I think a lot of people would be fine if Hill got like a top, someone on the front, not top five, but someone on the lower half of the top 10. That's what a lot of people, I think, are going to be asking for. And after tonight, again, I don't know if I would do it, but boy, it's hard to argue against because the hype is very, very real. Striking and maturity really advanced for a guy who I think he's 29. I would say he's 29 or 27. What's Hill? Hill is
29.
So he's 29. Right in the middle of his prime. Again, experience-wise, of course, has a bit of catching up to do. But he wouldn't look like it tonight. If you told me tonight that this was a guy who has twice as many fights, that had 16, 17, 18 pro fights, I would have believed you. He looked really good. So, thank goodness, justice was served in a way because OSP did miss weight by 1.5 pounds, which was surprising. So hopefully he gets that sorted out. But congratulations to Hill, though. He took care of business against and got a little bit of extra cash from the miss.
Casey, your thoughts on Jamahal Hill's performance? I thought he looked great. First round was a little interesting because OSP was so calculated in there and he was making him guess and he was landing kicks and it was an interesting approach. And it's so funny watching OSP fight because he's just so calm in there. It's like he's playing chess. It's really interesting. But man, Jamahal Hill really opened things up. What did you think of his performance in the co-main event?
I think maybe besides Vittori, actually, I think above Vittori, I think Jamahal Hill was the breakout star of this card. I really didn't have an opinion on Jamahal Hill coming into this. I knew it was like, okay, he's 2-0. He smokes weed, whatever. He's a good guy. He's a good fighter. But I was picking OSP all week, and this is weird, but like it was actually from the media day and watching Jamahal Hill talk just about the fight and just his presence and just talking about the BS, his suspension and all that stuff, and then OSP missing weight at 9 a.m., which is just like the weirdest thing ever. I don't understand. And, you know, after talking to Brandon Fitzgerald, I was like, maybe OSP's just like, he doesn't want it as much. It sounds cheesy, but is he just not, doesn't want it as much as Jamahal Hill? So I really, like the last second, I was like, you know what? I'm picking Hill. And then I feel really smart about that one. But man, Hill just looked awesome. I mean, I'm not going to say this guy's going to be fighting for a title in a year. I mean, but beating a guy like OSP just means that you're now an elite 205er. And I'm just very excited to see what's next of him.
There you go. We're going to take listener questions in a moment. Couple of things. Dana White is speaking to the media right now, and we'll give you some interesting tidbits right now, so you don't have to leave. I don't want you to leave. You could watch it later. Dana White did say, one, that he will be rewarding Jamahal Hill and Ilia Topuria for their performances good tonight.
I was about to say Jamahal Hill was robbed of 50K. I really think that he shouldn't got 50K. Jason Herzog's proper stoppage, it robbed Hill of a clean knockout.
Yeah. Well, in fairness, and on a night like this, someone's going to get robbed if they're not getting $50,000. It's a really great finish. So, and by the way, hopefully Dana White does it. Just give them a check or direct deposit, however Norley pays them, and not the Davison Figueiredo bag of cash. Come on, guys. What are we? Come on. That's great for, nobody great wants for social media.
What is this, Pride FC?
Tax free, baby. Take that bag of cash. So much cooler than, because I mean, it takes like months for those bonus checks to come in, and Figgy got it right off the bat. So he's in a better position than anybody else on the card right now.
You know what? Just do the tan bag with the huge dollar sign on it next time. How about that? That'll be there. We go. Okay, if we're just gonna just give people money like this, jeez, see, Louise.
You put 100 in the outside, and you put a bunch of ones in the middle. That's all.
Yes. Oh, God, that'd be horrible.
Oh, man. The other thing I did want to mention, since we talked about Yoel Romero, Dana White, of course, is asked about it at the press conference, and he says that the UFC is going to be doing some serious cuts before the end of the year, and when asked about a number, he said around 60 or so fighters will be getting their walking papers before the end of the year.
First of all, shout-outs to, I think it's our Damon Martin, who is handling the tweeting out the Dana White comments. So shout out to him. He is, for everyone watching, he is okay after being knocked out earlier in the evening by Ilia Topuria. Damon Martin is fine. In fact, I'm being told it was not Damon Martin. It was actually the fighter Damon Jackson, but there's been some confusion in the past. So if everyone's wondering, Damon is fine. He's watching from the comfort of his own home and not being bludgeoned by a undefeated featherweight from Georgia. The cutting, we've talked about this, I think, on other shows. This is the consequence of, unfortunately, I think some of the money that was lost this year is the cost of business. I've kind of rallied against it because we know a lot of the talent coming in is from Contender Series. And it's going around. It makes for a great story. We have some great performers. Jordan Levitt was from Contender Series today. Who else? Jamahal Hill. He's definitely not the only one. Jamahal Hill was from Contender Series. So for sure, we're talking about guys who could be future stars, great fighter. There's nothing wrong with getting guys from Contender Series. It's just, it's conveniently a way. These guys are, especially Jamahal Hill, who just had a co-main event. I guarantee you he's not getting paid near as much as the Yoel Romero. So you just kind of have to do the math and see what's the reason that they can now afford to cut some of these name fighters, these veterans like, again, Juicy Formiga, Yoel Romero, John Dodson earlier this year, guys who are getting either six-figure paydays or close to six-figure paydays for each appearance compared to entry-level guys from Contender Series. So when Dana White says 60 fighters going to be cut, that's going to be closer to the top of the rankings than the bottom. And the middle, I should say. Fine, mostly from the middle. But definitely there's many guys near the top 10 that you're like, wow, I can't believe they cut them. It's going to happen.
The NBA playoffs are heating up, and so is the action at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NBA. DraftKings brings you same-game parlays, live betting, odds boosts, and so much more. Don't miss out as the NBA postseason winds down. And new customers to DraftKings can bet $5 to get $150 in bonus bets instantly. You can download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now and use code VOXMMA. That's code VOXMMA for new customers to get $150 in bonus bets when you bet just $5. Only on DraftKings. The crown is yours.
Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Or in West Virginia, visit 1-800-GAMBLER.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly. On behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort in Kansas, 21 and over. Age varies by jurisdiction. Void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.co/bball for eligibility and deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources.
Hey, this is Scott Galloway, author, professor, entrepreneur, and most importantly, host of the Prop G podcast. We got a special series running on right now called The Future of Work, where I answer all your questions on, surprise, the future of work. Questions including, what are we missing when we work remotely? Or how do we handle work-life balance when a major opportunity comes knocking? From the provocative to the technical, we're offering insights you won't want to miss. So tune in to The Future of Work, a Prop G Pod special sponsored by Canva. You can find it on the Prop G Pod wherever you get your podcasts.
It sucks.
Well, we'll see how that all plays out. We'll keep you posted here on MMAfighting.com. But in the meantime, let's talk about some positive stuff. Let's talk about the card. Let's go to the peeps. Let's see what the peeps have to say following this weird event with all the cancellations. And by the way, if you guys didn't know, Cody Durden versus Jimmy Flick, that has been rebooked for December 19th. Also, yes. Tyler Santos was supposed to fight Montana De La Rosa on tonight's card. She will now fight Jillian Robertson on December 19th. Jillian Robertson is supposed to fight Andrea Lee next week at UFC 256. Andrea Lee had a broken nose, so she is out of that fight, and now Robertson will fight Tyler Santos on December 19th. Hi, Candy. Hi, what the? Hi, Panda.
Jessica Kistler Koo, always welcome. Always good to see you.
Nicknames, and big shout out to Brennan Fitzgerald, aka the Ocean.
The Ocean,
yes, the Ocean. Oh, I should have listened to him on some of these picks. Why didn't I listen to him? We brought his brilliant mind onto the show, and in my arrogance, I'm like, what does Brennan Fitzgerald know? He just watches these fights up close for a living, and I got what I deserved. So thanks again to Brendan, and definitely give him a follow on Twitter, people.
For sure.
Do, 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 do. All right,
his podcast is really good too. Yes, Joseph Bosa, our old buddy. Marvin Vettori is 4-0-1 in his last five fights. I love the call out of number two, Paulo Costa. Should he call out Izzy? I could see him in 2021 going for the title. So you want to take that, AK? I mean, I think he's called out Izzy in like every conversation at this
point. Exactly. I mean, I was saying, should he call him out again? Yeah, he should call him out again. I think he's actually done a really good job of that. He should always, because they fought once, and getting a rematch is actually really hard in the UFC. So the fact that maybe the first couple of times he brought it up, people were kind of rolling their eyes, like, you know, maybe they thought the fight wasn't as close as the scorecard said. It was a split decision win for Adesanya. Some people said it should have been unanimous. But the fact that he went the distance with them, that's something that Vettori has been hanging his hat on for a while, and good for him. Okay. People don't care about the truth. People won't remember the details of how that first fight went. You keep telling people how close that fight was, and you keep mentioning it. And most importantly, keep winning fights, which he's been doing. This was four straight tonight. So should he call out Izzy again? Yes, he should call out Izzy every time, especially when us in the media are throwing questions out there and trying to bait those kind of answers out of him. Yes, go for it. Because if it happens, there's going to be a lot, again, he's already working on generating interest. He calls out other people too. That's the important thing. He's not just focused on Izzy. He calls out other people as well. There's a feud with Holland. He's planting a lot of seeds, and that's what a lot of fighters should do. So could he go for the title in 2021? It really depends on what Izzy is doing with light heavyweight and some other fights he probably wants to take. But I'm telling you, it is not out of the realm of possibility that fight happens, a title fight for Vettori, whether it's against Adesanya or some other situation. 2021, I think it's very possible.
Dana White was asked about it at the press conference. He said he's not making any decisions or even talking about the top of the middleweight division until Izzy fights for the light heavyweight title, which apparently that is still the plan at this point. But I think we talked about this, Casey, but you like the Costa call out, but can you see Marvin Vettori potentially fighting for a world title next year?
Yes, absolutely. Actually, I think he has that personality that Dana loves. That just like, he's tough, he's mean, you know, like he's Dana just loves that type of guy. And, you know, and more than that, Vettori is just that guy, you put a microphone in front of him, he'll just say things. They don't have to necessarily make sense, but he'll say things and it'll draw clicks, it draws interest, and that's what the UFC wants. I mean, his pre-fight stuff, he was saying, what has Izzy really done? You know, all this kind of, okay, just say your thing. You know, all right, you're the fighter. You know, you can beat me up. I'm not gonna say you're wrong. But tonight, with this solid victory, and if he can beat Costa, no matter what, decision, whatever, just, as long as he just gets the W, yeah, absolutely. It's a storyline. It's an easy sell. You know, it was a split decision. It was technically the closest fight, you know, that Izzy has fought in the UFC. So, yeah, absolutely.
Thank you, Joseph Boza, for the questions, as always. I'm sure we'll see his name once more. Always coming through. Sheila, how are you? What did you think of Jason Herzog's stoppage of the OSP Hill fight? Was it early, late, or just right? I think we talked about this earlier. I thought it was tremendous. I thought it was a tremendous stoppage, but Casey actually makes a pretty decent point. He kind of robbed Jamal Hill of a bonus, of an official bonus, because had he let that go on, he was probably going to knock OSP stiff. So from a fighter safety standpoint, it was a brilliant stoppage. I mean, OSP was done, but from like a highlight reel standpoint, I mean, it's, I don't know. Anybody else have anything to add to that?
Casey, go ahead. I know you're a big fan of it on social media, and I believe you got a shout out from the man himself. Did you not on Twitter?
Oh, I did.
Yes. You didn't see that?
I get so many mentions. You know, I can't check them all.
Oh my goodness. Man. You didn't see what he, I think, okay, look that up while I'll talk. Yes, he was very confident. And I believe it is the real Jason Herzog. I think he's one of the few referees that actually is, that does have a real Twitter account and is active. Not like some of the fake Keith Petersons and fake, fake Mari Yamasaki's guys. Those aren't real. Sorry to break it for anyone who follows those accounts. I think there's like, there's a Mari Yamasaki and I know there's a Keith Peterson for a while. I think that got changed something else, but.
Basically, on Twitter, I complimented Jason Herzog. I think he is the best. Actually, I think he is the best ref in MMA. For some reason, he never gets mentioned. I'm not sure why. But I think he's a great ref, just a great person, actually. I think he's just a nice guy. But back to this question, perfect stoppage. Just a perfect stoppage. You felt if Hill would have hit OSP one more time, OSP, you were just waiting for OSP just to go lights out. And as a fan of violence, yeah, of course I want to see that. But as like a human being who doesn't want people to die unnecessarily, I guess. Great stoppage by Jason Herzog. So to answer your question, Sheila, just right.
Did you read what he said about you, Casey?
No.
Did you not find the comment?
No, I can't find it.
You said perfect stoppage from the best reference business, Jason Herzog. He quote tweeted you and said, from one of the best to have ever done it. Miss seeing you and the Esther. Thanks, Casey.
Aww.
So love. I didn't retweet it because I just didn't know.
Yeah. That's amazing stuff. I'll tell you who else had a great. I'll tell you what other referee had a great moment tonight. Mark Smith had a great moment tonight after the Benitez knee to the chest. He jumped right in there and saved Justin James from any further damage. That was a great stoppage as well.
Who was the ref for? Mr. Damon Jackson's fight. Was that Chris Tayoni?
I want to say Tayoni. I can actually find that for you right now.
It's a prelim fight. It's gotta be Damon Jackson.
It was Mark Smith, according to Topology. I think Tayoni did the first fight of the night.
Okay. Yeah. It wasn't a late stoppage. Yep, I mean, it was so quick, but man, there was that last shot that Damon Jackson got hit with that last shot. I was like, ooh, that's bad. That's bad. But I mean, the stoppage is real fast. It just happens that way. It's just the sport.
I also want to compliment Herzog. Oh my gosh, scary. I want to comment Herzog's technique, because he did the full body. He didn't do the step in kind of wave off. Mm-hmm. He went in for a full body grab and yanked Jamal Hill off. And that's not always something you want to do. I mean, you're at a high risk of catching a live round. Really, anytime you step into the action, you're at a high risk of catching a live round. But grabbing someone is, I mean, some people might thought it was a bit strange, but I think that situation, he needed to do it. Hill firing so fast. I don't know if there's any other way to kind of have stopped him. So I thought, yeah, even not just timing, but I think the technique also. I was like, yeah, man, he wrestling with one of those light heavyweights. Boy, you got to be careful. But he did it a good job. And I think saved OSP from some punches for sure.
Yep. A-plus stoppage. Jamal Hill versus Dominic Reyes next. Dominic Reyes is fighting Yuri Prochazka next.
Oh.
So maybe after that. But I think Jamal Hill will probably want to get back in there a little sooner. But Anthony Smith versus Jamal Hill.
Oh,
I'm seeing lots of suggestions for. I think people want to see. People are excited about Jamal Hill. People think new life to 205 is always exciting. So I think people want to. Is Anthony Smith the higher level gatekeeper over? Is Anthony Smith? I don't know. I hope Anthony Smith isn't hearing this. He's going to get mad if he hears that.
Nobody wants to hear that.
Yeah, he doesn't want to hear that. I don't know. What do you think about that? I know you guys do your little, your little onto the next podcast. You don't want to give it away, but.
I already know who I'm going to pick for Jamal Hill. It's not Anthony Smith.
Is that too high up the ladder?
No.
No?
Because my pick is right near there.
Right there.
First of all, shout out to Samuel Ferry in the comments, who says the commission should fire Chris Lee and hire AK Lee. No. I'm a little too corrupt. I'm a little too corrupt. I don't think that's going to work out, but thank you for the comment. He means fire me from this show, I think he means, and then let me, so I can go into career and judging. But again, I don't think he's aware of how corrupt I am, how easily influenced I am. I don't mind the answer thing. Yeah, I'm gonna have to put a little more thought into that. Like Mike said, we'll talk about more in our show. But the Dominic Reyes thing, I'm gonna ask you guys, I saw some people comparing him to Reyes. So I don't know, what do you guys think about? Do you see him as the striking, the athleticism, the how he knows how to use his length? Do you see some comparison there?
I'm probably not like the technical guy to ask, but I would say like points in their career, where their records are and kind of their direction. I could see similarity. Cause I mean, Dominic Reyes kind of got to that next level beating OSP, and this could be a very similar thing. So there are similarities there. I will go to Casey more on the technical side. If you kind of look at these two guys at their respective points in their career, if you compare the two based on striking and technique and stuff, do you see similarities between Jamal Hill and Dominic Reyes?
There's similarities. I mean, they both use range well. They both have really long punches. They can hit. They feel like they can hit you from a deceptively long distance away. I gotta actually look at. I mean, like I said, coming into this fight, I really didn't know much about Jamal Hill. He was just, to me, just kind of like a mid-tier 205er. And tonight was like actually the first. Tonight was one of those fights when I was watching. I kind of got really close to the screen. I was like, I'm going to be seeing a lot of Jamal Hill soon. So I need to really watch more of him, because I feel like he's a guy that for the next, I don't know, at least few years, we're going to see him in the top 10. You know, how high? Who knows? But he's going to be up there. So I'm just more excited about seeing Jamal Hill. He seems like a good personality. I love how he used his mic time. He talked about his a friend that passed away from drinking and driving, and it was real passionate. He just seems like a guy that has a lot to say, in the cage with his fist and outside the cage. So he used that opportunity well. So as a journalist, I'm excited to have someone like Jamal Hill, in the forefront.
Agreed. We're not firing AK Lee. He's too valuable.
Oh yeah, get that comment out of here. This isn't about tonight's card, but this needs to be answered.
Oh God!
Whoa! Why are we discussing this? He's not in danger. He's not one of the 60 that's in danger of being cut. All right. Dana White could say he's going to cut 160 fighters, and you would not, and Ryan Hall would not be at risk. Okay. So John Danian, oh, my heart, to even suggest it. Goodness me. I wasn't ready.
All
right.
I don't like that at all.
Man, I
didn't want to read that out loud. Yeah.
Moving on.
Yeah. You know what? We're getting a lot of questions about the potential cuts. And I kind of, you know, I don't want to go there. I don't think we need to go. I don't want to. That's just not a fun thing to talk about. You know, like, right. Oh, this guy. No. Yeah. So if you're throwing suggestions who should get cut, I'm just telling you, you're kind of wasting your time. But
and you're a little mean. Yeah. I mean, you're a little mean.
And you're a jerk.
Sorry. No, I didn't say you're a little mean.
What's next for Gabriel Benitez? That is a good question.
Was he always going to be on the? He was always going to be on the main card, right? He wasn't one of the fights. Him and James. It wasn't one of the fights that was moved up. I don't think, right?
Not necessarily today, but this week.
Early this week.
I think it was on the prelims earlier, and I think it got bumped up, like maybe Wednesday or Thursday, and then, you know what I mean.
Yeah, I definitely overlooked. I guess I'm a little too big on the Jane's train a bit. I like Jane's style. It's really aggressive. Get in there, you know, try and knock people out, which is really fun to watch. But Mowgli, for sure, is a guy who over the years, I think we kind of put him in that category of like when he's on, he looks like a top 20, you know, lightweight or featherweight, competing at featherweight before. But he looks like a top 20 guy in his division when he's on. Very talented, great kicks, really solid boxing, good grappler. But, you know, for some reason, for whatever, there's just fights where he can't seem to pull the trigger, or he's just outclassed, just facing someone who maybe is just a level above him. But he looked great tonight. He took care of business against someone that he should, a less experienced guy. So what is next for him? Again, we'll talk about it more on the show. But I think he's earned the right, I'll say, probably to face someone closer to his level of experience again. Because, again, Justin James was kind of a high-risk, low-reward fight for him. Omar Morales was a great matchup, but again, someone else who kind of had more to gain. So hopefully he gets a little bit more of a veteran opponent for Mowgli next time.
Anybody stick out to you, Casey?
No, I just think Gabriel Benitez just kind of proved that he's a UFC caliber fighter, really. And I don't expect him to get a top 15 guy. I expect him, you know, we'll see him in about 3 months or so. And he'll be on a fight night card, you know, four or five fights in, and he's always gonna be an exciting fighter. And if he pulls off two or three more wins, unfortunately he needs wins over higher level opponents than Justin James, unfortunately, for us to really start considering him a top tier. Was this at lightweight or feather? I'm sorry, was this at lightweight or featherweight?
No, it was his second fight at lightweight in the UFC.
Okay,
and his first win at lightweight.
Well, we know that's a good sign. His first win at lightweight, so. Fresh start, fresh weight class. So I'm excited to hear from him again. So we'll see. Well, he'll be fine a couple more times.
Yeah, those kicks are lethal. Yeah.
Ooh. Thank you, Mara 226-4419.
That's a real name, too.
Yeah, I couldn't pronounce the last name, but so I just spelled it out.
Matt Wyman slam worst KO since the Ben Askren knee.
Oof. We said we're gonna talk about this, right? We gotta talk about this finish, yes. Right?
Yeah. Oh, I mean, that's a perfect segue. Let me just say real quick. I've been talking to Jordan Levitt for a little while now, since he was like a regional prospect making his way up, and this guy had a hard time finding fights because of his style. He's a little awkward, and multiple interviews, he just kept telling me like, I just want to know what it feels like to knock somebody out. You know what I mean? Like, he's got all submission wins, maybe the occasional unanimous decision, but he hasn't had like a knockout or a TKO finish in his career. I don't think he drew it up this way tonight, but he certainly got one, and he got a bonus. And I think he gained a lot of fans tonight because people got to see him on camera. He's a very interesting cat, as you can see with this. He just looks like the silent killer that you think you can mess with, but then he just slams you on your head. Very, very good performance for him. The opponent, Casey, Matt Wyman, pretty surprising to see him in another fight. We saw the Luis Pena fight. That was pretty gnarly after all those years away. Then he fought Joe Selecki, and Joe Selecki did what Joe Selecki does. He couldn't finish him. Wyman's a very hard man to submit. But Selecki dominated him, and then this was just really bad. What do you think, Casey? Matt Wyman fighting tonight or in the last year or so?
Matt, okay. We'll start with the negative. Matt Wyman, unfortunately, should not have been fighting tonight. He's not a UFC level fighter anymore. Whenever he left the UFC in 2014, so he was away from the UFC for like 5.5, 6 years or something like that. He's just not. I don't understand. I don't understand the UFC's booking of this fight. I don't understand why Matt Wyman, who had has looked bad in two fights already in the UFC, was given this fight. I just don't get it. And And unfortunately, I think for Matt Wyman, it might be time to hang him up as far as fighting, you know, top level competition. Maybe if he wants to fight on the regional circuit against, you know, guys like me, I don't know. But it was ugly. It was just, and even what he was doing, even the slam, as cool as the slam was, I mean, I want to give Jordan Leavitt all the credit in the world, but like, what was Matt Wyman thinking? What was he thinking? I have no idea. And but going back to Jordan Leavitt, man, I like that dude. Talk about a man who's like redefining masculinity, like knock out someone and then you do the splits. Man, I know he didn't mean to be. I know it wasn't meant to be insulting, but if someone knocked me out cold and I'm like, oh, I get up and I look across and I just see a dude doing the splits and his friends lifting him up like in their dirty dancing. Ooh, you've been on the wrong end of a fight.
Yeah. And it was very cool on Leavitt to go and console Wyman's wife.
Yeah, yeah. I don't think there was nothing disrespectful from Leavitt. He didn't mean to be disrespectful, but I'm just like, whoo, man, that's just like, yeah. But
I think that's part of Kieran Welch's comment here as far as the worst. Because remember, Masvidal also had quite a fancy celebration after he did. He kind of just dropped, flopped dead to the mat to almost to imitate how badly he had just messed up Askren. So that was probably worse. That's probably why the Masvidal one is. I don't know if there will ever be a nastier, worst KO if we're using worst, ugly, mean-spirited KO. I don't know if there'll ever be one better or worse again than Jorge Masvidal, but yeah, it was tough to watch. I mean, that's the other thing we'll say when we use the term worst in the question. It was tough to watch because, again, Matt Wyman is a guy who I think a lot of us have been watching for a while. He was part of one of the greatest Ultimate Fighter seasons ever, Tough Five, the lightweight season when they re-implemented the lightweights into the UFC. Really fun season. He was a very good fighter for a while. He had a couple of winning streaks in the UFC in 155, very difficult to do. And even went out on a win before the hiatus. He beat Isaac Valleyflag. I'm just looking at this now, November 2014. And then, you know, stepped away. I believe there's some back injuries as well, which in any sport is very difficult to come back from. Even if you're able to, you know, get back in the cage or get back in the court or get back in the field, whatever sport we're talking about, those back injuries are just, once you start getting them, it doesn't get better. You know, it's only going to go downhill from there. And we might be seeing that with Wyman. He's the oldest fighter on the card. He's a few months older than OSP. So, yeah, and then putting him in there with, like Mike said, someone who's clearly a high-level prospect in Leavitt, it was rough. And for Leavitt to literally just carry him over to his corner and drop him down like that, it was shocking. You know, it was just not something you expect to see at the UFC level. And then again, that's the Casey's point, I think, is maybe because Wyman is just not UFC level anymore. So this is a really harsh thing to say. I think he's had a very good career. And, yeah, we just hope Matt Wyman, whatever's next, he makes a decision that's best for him and his health. But Leavitt, I have to celebrate his celebration. The dirty dancing lift was fantastic. So this is for Jordan Leavitt. I'm going to get in the mic for a second here.
Oh, no.
Had the time of my life. And I never felt this way before. That was for Leavitt. True.
No, keep going. There's like, that's just
no.
Why are you stopping, man? The view count is going through the roof.
I know. I don't give that away for free. I don't give that away for free. Got my own YouTube channel. I got my own YouTube channel, man. Come on.
But, join Alex Cayley's Patreon page if you want to hear the rest of that song.
Yes, I could see Leavitt becoming either a fan favorite or possibly a villain, depending how people view his kind of over the top antics. But he made a real mark tonight, not just with his performance, but the celebration, the post fight interview. A lot of people will be talking about Leavitt, I think, after this weekend.
Yeah, Jordan Leavitt, an avid reader too. He likes to read like 75 to 100 books a year.
What?
He's a madman. when it comes
to that stuff. I haven't read that many books in my life.
Tristan Gordad is here. Where do you put Jordan Levitt's slam knockout as far as being the nastiest? I mean, it was brutal. I mean, that was a brutal slam, but we've seen, I don't know. I mean, Gerald Harris, David Branch, that was a gnarly one. I think everyone kind of looks to the Rampage power bombs.
I think
I feel like that one's going to be like always in the top of the conversation.
I don't know how it was for you, but like, okay, say when I watched Damon Jackson get knocked out, I was like, oh, wow, that's amazing. What a crazy knockout, you know? Because I know Damon Jackson's a high-level fighter. He's a good fighter. When Jordan Levitt slammed Wyman, I didn't get that same feeling. I just felt like, oh, that's just... Because it wasn't like... It was just...
Icky.
It was icky.
A little icky. Yeah,
it was
a
little icky. Okay. I was wondering if that was just me that felt that way, but like it didn't... Like, some knockouts are cool, but you're like, oh, that guy took a beating. But this one was just like, oh, yeah. So
it was scary.
Okay.
The nastiest will probably always be, if we're not talking about UFC, of course, the Rampage Arona one, which I, of course, will always say was not technically a slam knockout because it was the headbutt that knocked out Arona. But, I mean, if we're just talking about the visual, nothing's ever going to top a Jackson slamming Arona. That's the nastiest slam-esque KO that you'll ever see in MMA.
And you know why that was particularly nasty? Because from a TV standpoint, it was shot in a ring. So because it's shot in a ring, the camera can shoot almost eye level. So when you see that knockout, you're actually seeing it like as if you're just sitting on the ring. So it's always the impact is even more impactful. So if you're wondering why visually it felt more intense.
And people forget. You know, I've been seeing this a lot on Twitter tonight, like talking about like the slam knockouts. People are forgetting about Jessica Andrade against Rose Namajunas. That was a filthy, nasty slam too.
That was recent. Yeah, that was
someone in our comments mentioned it. Joshua Carey mentioned it. He said he thinks his so. Josh Carey, shout out to you. Yeah. Yes, that was scary.
That was one that I would definitely say as far as like high level, it's two A-level fighters fighting each other. That was the scariest knockout I've ever seen.
Yeah, it was the angle too. It was I think the fact that she wasn't almost like knocked out like cold instantly is kind of what also made it scary because the fight wasn't over right away and you were just like, but you knew anyone watching, you saw that she almost landed like again almost on her head, almost on the neck, and she, you know, has kind of turned over and then Andrade finished. But you're kind of like holy, like you're watching like something's wrong. That's like she the way she's turtling and the way she's kind of like that's not normal for Rose. She could be seriously hurt. And thankfully, again, as far as we know, you know, nothing super long term. She's come back and fought already. But that's another scary one.
Yeah. Thank you, Tristan. What's next for OSP?
That's a good question, because we might not cover. Well, I think we'll cover on the show, but we're still discussing that.
I don't think we will.
No, co-main event, right? Co-main event loser is not necessarily guaranteed. That's a really good question.
How about Mr. Dolidze?
Yeah. Yeah, no, I like it. I was going to say, I thought Casey was going to chime in. No, I like it. This is though, we're essentially saying that this is OSP's role now. Is to we hate keeping using the word stepping stone, gatekeeper, any of that stuff, which, you know, if fighters hear it, they don't feel good being called that. Some might feel better about it than others, but I think guys like we said Anthony Smith before, who competed for titles recently, as like last year, right? And then and OSP, who has competed for title some years back, that's a hard thing to accept, to be in that role. But I think if he was matched up with the lead, say, then that's sending a pretty strong message from the UFC that's where they're going to go. I still think there's guys in the top 20. Well, the lead, say, might be in the top 20 after tonight. But I think there's other, again, closer in experience level. But I think we saw tonight that and considering how many fights he has in the UFC, this is his 23rd UFC fight tonight. It's really hard to match him up with anyone with similar experience levels. So it might be that the lead says that he has to sign on the dotted line for.
What do you think, Casey? Let me ask you this. True or false, OSP's next fight will be at 205?
Yeah, that might be... No, I think it's false. I think it's false. I don't want to be negative, but with Dana White talking about all these cuts coming up, you know, I don't know what OSP gets paid, but I know, you know, he's probably on the higher end of the 205ers. But if he does stay around, there's actually lots of fights for him, to be honest. He's still a name. He's a name in the sense that you need to beat him to become a name. So I don't think there's going to be a shortage of UFC finding good opponents for OSP, either at 205 or heavyweight. I still want to know why he didn't make weight at 205. That's still this big mystery. So secretly, I kind of wanted him to win just because so I could hear what happened. But whoever, what's next for OSP is really who the UFC matchmakers want to push. Because I really don't think the UFC or the matchmakers are trying to matchmake for OSP to get a title shot anytime soon.
Maybe do OSP versus Jake Collier at heavyweight.
I like that.
I'd be down for that. I'd be okay with that.
Hell yeah. Let's do it.
You know what? We didn't get any. Wait,
or John Volante.
Yes. There you go. Heavyweight. And I want to see OSP like at 264. I don't want to see OSP like at 230. I want to see big gut OSP.
He was at 240 when he fought Ben Rothwell.
Yeah. We got 25 more pounds to add to him.
For a second, I thought OSP and Volante had fought. Somehow they haven't. That seems bizarre.
They really? They're two Strikeforce vets who are still in the UFC after this many years?
Oh, no, I'm sorry. They did. I'm sorry. I was looking at the – they did fight UFC. Oh, it was – I'm dumb. It was Volante's first fight with the UFC. 7 years ago. How could I not remember this? UFC 159.
Yeah, but they fought. They were little twigs at 205. Now they're big, thick boys, you know.
I'd love to see that rematch. That's a lifetime ago.
Yeah. Yeah. OSP, John Volante at 266 pounds.
Open up a new division. Right at the edge. Yeah,
they're gonna open up the division.
Not championship weight. Oh, they normally want to see him at championship weight.
I had so much fun watching Volante and Collier fight. That was just so much fun. Good.
Hey, I caught it. I caught it on the preview show. I said, that's the fight, man. That was the fight to watch. And sure enough, they started off strong. But then they just kept slowing down, but they were still throwing haze. They were still like throwing those bungalows. It was great. And the fact there was no mic, there were no fans, and like you could hear just like bellies getting slapped. Oh, it was great. And like just so much sweat. It was like, oh, it was amazing.
Oh, man.
I love that part of MMA. Like we get, you know, guys with like 12 packs, whatever. I just want to see two guys with two kegs in front of the belly.
There really wasn't a bad fight in the card. I think they got it started off on a really nice note. Yeah. And Collier really impressed me, I will say. Yeah. This was definitely a back against the wall performance. I think Collier doesn't win this. Volante is pretty well liked by management. He's a character, you know, he's kind of a marketable character. Collier, I think, was probably back against the wall and he needed this one. And good, won a convincing decision and an entertaining fight.
Wow. So his UFC run has been loss, lose, loss, win, loss, win. Oh God, his whole UFC run has been one loss, one win, one loss, one win. His entire UFC run. That is
incredible. Except for the last two fights.
Where am I looking?
He's lost two in a row now.
You're talking about Collier, not Volante.
No, Collier.
Oh, Collier. My bad.
Yeah, sorry.
Yeah. Well, this is his first fight as a, he worked like 60 or 70 hours a week as a welder throughout most of his career. So this is like the first time he was like a full-time fighter. Like he had full training camp and now he's honed in. He's focused.
He's 10 years into his career. He's 10 years in.
Well, now he's a full-time fighter. He can just focus on the training and the eating and the fighting.
What a weird sport. Like he's been in the UFC for 6 years now and it's still a part-time gig.
That's not how it should be.
Yeah, that's just odd.
Now we saw Britt guys like Brandon Royval, like after his first UFC fight and getting a bonus, like he quit his job. Now he's a full-time fighter. We've seen the year that guy's had.
Oh,
Who was it that keeps saying Chaos Williams or Chaos Williams who said he's still working his job or Buckley?
No, it's Joaquin Buckley.
Still yeah, working, he's still working.
Walgreens or something. Or
right, right. Walgreens. He's still working at Walgreens.
Brad Riddell versus Benitez. Interesting matchup.
Sure, I'll steal that for our show. Yeah,
I feel like Brad Riddell might be past Benitez, but Brad Riddell is awesome, and he put him against anyone. I just want to see him fight, to be honest. So
yeah,
I still like Riddell versus Alex Hernandez.
Yeah, that's what I mean. I think Riddell is a little farther up the ladder.
Yeah, he's 3-0.
That's fun fight.
Thank you, Kahu.
Was it just me or was Cruz correcting Felder a lot tonight?
I think he does that a lot. I don't think that's an exception tonight. He does that a lot, I think, with whoever he's commentating with.
I thought Cruz and Felder were great tonight.
Yeah, yeah, they were.
Because like, and I know I love to roll my eyes like, oh my God, really, guys? And or like, you know, because these are UFC commentators. Their checks are written by the UFC. So they never like, you know, they don't want to trash anyone. But I feel that Cruz and Felder and Anik were still honest in it. They never try to oversell me something, you know? So I just think that's why I really appreciate them. And not one point did I go, that's stupid or what? Everything, okay, that makes sense, you know? So I'm always happy with that.
Someone mentioned in the comments earlier, did it seem like they were talking about addressing the judging more? And I think they were. But I think that also has a lot to do with Bisping was not in there. Bisping, I think, is a good color guy, but also doesn't have the best grasp of scoring or sort of how the judging works. we were very critical of him and Rogan. I think the last time him and Rogan were doing a pay-per-view, and I think rightfully so. I know we're going to take a lot of flack for that. A lot of all you Rogan fans out there don't want to hear that, but I think that they just didn't do a great job. And poor DC got dragged into it as well, and it was just shenanigans. But Cruz, Felder, and Anik all seem to have a really good grasp of generally how scoring should go. Of course, everyone, it's live TV, you're going to make mistakes, you're going to see things maybe not 100% accurate, but they're pretty good about explaining things, making sense of the scoring. So yeah, if it seems like they were, I don't think it's like they were allowed to. I think it's just the nature of this team. They're analytically minded, and they did. Yeah, I thought that was one of the best parts of the show tonight. It was not just their chemistry, but judging and scoring is something people need a lot of education on, including us sometimes. So for them, the way they handled it tonight, that was really great.
One of the worst parts of the show, though, was Paul Felder shaving his mustache. What was that about?
It's December now. November's over.
Mustaches are all year long, Mr. Felder. This is your mustache is a lifestyle, bro. It's a lifestyle.
We got to say,
by the way, listen to any Dominic Cruz interview that has ever existed, and he will correct. He will correct and turn the interview over to you, like, and start interviewing you and asking you questions.
He's a smart guy.
Like, he really is. That's who he
he's
is.
He's a smart guy. He's probably, when it comes to real analysis, he's probably one of the smartest fighters that we've seen so far. Again, I'm sure somewhere down the road we'll have better fight analysts, but as of now, he is. I don't know if he's the best on air person, I'll be honest, like in the booth, but his analysis is top notch. It's elite. I mean, he's probably the standard of breaking things down. But Casey, you can't be mad at Felder because he also had the commentary of the night when addressing the delete say John Allen split decision. Oh. He was like, that's the word. He's like, that split decision was as bad as the split decision I had with Rafael Dos Anjos. Like, I did not win that fight. He was trying to say, whoever scored that fight for me, that was crazy. And this was worse. This was as bad as that. So always a very self-aware and willing to make fun of himself. So
I did appreciate Felder, that. I
really good. That was hilarious. Really funny.
And of course, Dominic Cruz just booked his next fight against Casey Kenney. How about that? That's gonna be a fun fight.
It's gonna be a fun fight, but who saw that one? I think everyone was like, Cruz Edgar. Cruz Edgar. Make it happen. Make it happen. It's the perfect time.
Maybe Sanhagen. Maybe we thought Sanhagen could still happen again.
Yeah.
But Kenny, go get it.
I don't know if we'll ever find out the real answer, but I really want to know, is that what the UFC wanted, or is that what Dominic Cruz wanted? I'm sure Casey Kenny isn't in the position to say that's what he wanted yet, but I'm just curious if that's the fight Dom saw, like, okay, that's the fight I need to come back to, or I'm not sure. I have no idea.
This is a big step up.
I have a theory. Mm-hmm. My theory is Casey Kenney and his manager Jason House were probably blowing up the matchmaker saying, I'll fight on this card. Oh, he's out. I'll fight on this card. It's probably just numerous texts and messages because Casey Kennedy just wants to fight every weekend. You know this by now. And they're probably like, listen, if you leave me alone, we'll get you something that you'll like. And then they gave him Dominic Cruz and now he'll leave him alone for the next 4 months. So that's basically how they looked at it. Like, all right, leave me alone. We'll give you Dominic Cruz. How about that? All right. I'll lose your number for a few months.
Pestering and annoying someone to get an opportunity. I'm very familiar with this tactic. It is how I've had many good. Yeah, that's how I got hired here. It's usually how I get any dates. Yeah, usually that's how any of my rare dates happen is through this tactic. So I can respect that, Mike. I believe that if that is true, I do think there's a lot of, it's very possible that that's how that happened. But huge step up for Kenny. I mean, in name value, his last few opponents, Nathaniel Wood, good fighter. Nowhere near as famous as Dominic Cruz, Haile Alatang, Luis Smoka, Murad was a nice one, but again, yeah, not a fame, you know, not a famous name. Manny Bermudez and Ray Borg, really, how he started his career. So he started off with someone with a bit of name value, but Dominic Cruz is leaps beyond these guys. So if he gets that win, boy, that is so huge, and he is a blue chipper, and it's a winnable fight. But maybe Cruz accepted the fight because he knows something we don't. Maybe he thinks this is a fearful matchup for him. So that's interesting.
I can't.
The footwork in that fight is going to be so fun to watch.
I think Dominic Cruz is fighting Casey Kinney simply because if you kind of squint your eyes when Casey Kinney fights, it kind of looks like TJ Dillashaw.
I knew you were going to say that. Well, TJ warm up.
Yeah.
Every time we do an interview with Casey Kennedy, that's like 90% of the comments that he looks like TJ Dillashaw. Yeah. Oh, it's Dillashaw 2.0. All that good stuff.
I feel bad when fighters get that comparison. When the constant comparison to someone else are like, yeah, we punch and we both have tattoos. And yeah, I guess we look alike. You know, it's just we're getting so many comments actually to for our karaoke suggestions for Mr. AK.
I'm not seeing any of these. Oh, hungry
eyes.
I'm embarrassed. Which one's hungry eyes again? I'm sorry to have to ask. I know it's embarrassing.
Hungry eyes.
Oh, of course. Magic
between you and I.
Oh, pretty. Okay.
I love that. That's a jam sandwich right there.
Sorry, David Sandine. I know that song, of course. Great recommendation. I apologize. I should have recognized it.
Oh, that's terrific.
So we're getting a lot of people asking for the link. Do you have one?
Yeah, I'll tweet it out later. I've been told not to promote it on MMA fighting channels. So I respect that. I cannot use our platform for my OnlyFans. Yes, Matrecki, that's correct. Yeah, there's some singing in it, and there's a lot more than that, let me tell you. No, but again, I told you, I'm not allowed to promote this.
What time is it on the East Coast? Woo!
Legally, I've told Vox Media I will not promote my OnlyFans on our channel. Check out my Twitter. I will send it out. Or join my mailing guitar. List.
That's what he means. I play guitar along with the singing. Ooh.
I just want... Careless whisper. What is it without the saxophone, though, really? I mean...
You get Gerald Nearshire. Yeah. He'll play with you.
Oh, I would love... That's true. That'd be a great collab. Yeah.
Maybe a little holiday gift for the peeps.
Yeah, that last one. Yeah. Last one, real quick.
Face the pain.
People, just watch our video on. Did we do a video out of it or just on you? Was it only a tweet?
Face the pain video.
When we got all the fighters,
We did do a face the pain video early in the pandemic.
Can they find it on YouTube though? Is it on YouTube?
Yeah.
Okay. Look up, yes, guys. Look on our channel for our Face the Pain montage. We got Angela Hill. Who's in there? Angela Hill. I think we got our old buddy Ariel Helwani's in there.
Dwight Grant's in it. Aljamain Sterling's in it.
Mirando Alishvili is the star.
He steals the show. He steals the show. Yeah.
Oh yeah. What a song though. I feel like Face the Pain is a great theme for 2021. I think a lot of us had to face the pain this year, and I hope came out better for it. What is the band called? What's the band called?
The band that sings Face the Pain?
Oh my, yes.
Oh,
why am I starting? This is so
it's like a regular word that's spelled wrong.
Yeah, someone will mention it in the comments. Please, people, throw it in the comments.
What is that? Like,
I am so embarrassed. I'm not going to look it up. I feel like I should remember this.
What is it?
STEM. With two M's.
Yeah, I got it. Yeah. It was a dumb word that's spelled incorrectly, and for some reason that becomes...
STEM, a timeless song, which I'm sure has become, again, even more relevant during these difficult times.
2002 was the first time that song was played on a UFC broadcast. Wow.
18 years ago? Holy cow.
Isn't that crazy?
It is time. You know what? It is time to end this suffering. I need a minute to myself.
I need a minute to myself. Who among us has not said that? Yeah. Who among us has not thought that or said that?
You will never get to me.
People, if you ever need to take a minute for yourself, do it. You deserve it. You work hard. Life is hard. You got to stop, end that suffering, take a minute to yourself, and find that inner peace.
Ripping into pieces.
Yes. Oh, God. It's a beautiful song.
Into pieces.
Casey, do we have more questions? I see. Are there questions?
I will say, though, I
deleted all the fight-related questions. Don't worry. They're gone.
Yeah, that's fine.
I will say that Ron Perlman's opens for those pay-per-view events are unbelievable. They're so good. Do we get any more questions? We'd probably take a couple more.
Yeah.
Any 256 questions?
256.
That's a good card.
Here we go. Let's answer this question.
It isn't about tonight, but next week, Manel Cape, revealed by MMA Fighting's own Mike Heck, will be on standby if something happens to Figgy versus Moreno. Thoughts on another new fighter being on standby? I love it. I love it so much. I confirmed it with a couple different people last night. I was actually kind of excited. Like, normally when I confirm news, I don't get goosebumps, but seeing Manel Cape in that spot kind of gave me goosebumps. I think it's a brilliant move. It's smart, especially with Pantoja not being able to fight on December 19th. You got Cape there. He's ready to go. He's been training at AKA, so he's already out on the West Coast anyways. So get him in there. Have him on standby. You got two guys coming in 3 weeks notice apiece, the shortest turnaround for champion and challenger in UFC history. It's nice to have a guy there, and what a story that would be. And I don't want to see anything happen to Figueiredo or Moreno, because I am really interested to see how that fight plays out. But what a story that would be if Manel Cape, who's had multiple fights, agreed to, signed, multiple dates, finally makes his UFC debut and he fights for a title in his first fight. That'd be so crazy. So wild.
I'm actually interested. So if... I don't know if anyone knows the answer to this. So say if Figueiredo misses weight, does that mean he's automatically pulled from the fight, or is there just a non-title fight?
I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, because...
He's already missed once this year.
Yeah.
And I know, like, you're playing with a little bit of fire here, turning him around in 3 weeks. But he did put pen to paper and say, I will be there, and I will be at 125. If he misses, I think it's for a vacant. You got to do a vacant title, right?
They're going to strip him from it. I mean, they may. I don't know.
I don't know. I don't know what they do.
And he's there
as a backup in case somebody misses weight, even if it's the champion.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. That's a good question. I don't know what they'll do.
Yeah. Yeah. And I don't want to be the mask police or anything, but I was very worried because I think Ariel Helwani from ESPN posted a video of Figueiredo getting his hair done at a salon.
Mm.
He is not wearing a mask. His stylist is not wearing a mask, but the camera people and the people in the background are wearing masks. So I was like, dude, Figgy, you have a main event pay-per-view coming up. I don't care if you think this is fake or whatever.
He's had it already.
If you get it, if Waleed gets it, come on, man. Like, if your corner man gets it, the fight's off. So, like, wear a freaking mask, man, just so I can see you fight, because you are an amazing fighter, but you got to show up. You got to be there. You have to be virus-free. So that really worried me. So I'm sure Manel Cape was like, ooh, when he saw that video. But I love Manel Cape as a backup. This actually makes a lot of sense for this fight. Sometimes it's just weird. Hey, maybe it's gonna be one of those weigh-ins where they're gonna have just like three or four five different fighters just weigh in. We're like, hey, who's this guy? Remember, like, what was that one weigh in? You had like four fighters.
Fight Island.
Yeah, which is like, what?
Oh yeah, that was so confusing. And then I remember, oh gosh, when Robert Whitaker's teammates or something came up, yeah, and we just had no idea. That was hilarious. That was almost like they were making fun of us, because at least we knew everyone else was weighing in. And then they just brought up this completely new signing, and we were just like, it was like a skit. It was like a Saturday Night Live skit. It was like it was really funny. There's one comment I just want to call out from Johnny Canuck, because it's not a question, it's just a nice thing to say. He said, I thought this channel sucked for a while. That part's not nice. But you guys made an amazing comeback. LOL. This mic guy is great. So Johnny Canuck, we agree. This mic guy is great. So thank you for leaving that comment. I do want to say one thing about Joseph Bose's question. I think the one thing we just didn't mention was he also specified, what do you guys think of it's a new fighter. It's a new fighter that's getting, you know, I think he means a new fighter, much like Michael Chandler. It was a new fighter to the UFC.
Right.
And then was put into a championship spot. It hasn't only been new fighters. I'm trying to remember what other fighters have been on standby for championship fights. It's pretty rare. You know, they usually don't plan for it. It's usually only when something like this happens where a fight falls out and then they keep someone up. Pantoja, was he kept on as a standby for one of those flyweight titles? Am I crazy?
The one I remember was... Didn't Cannoneer get brought in as a backup
and he missed weight? Yeah.
Oh, God. So strange.
I don't remember what fight that was for. Was that 244? Was that for the Telf Gastelum fight?
Oh, I was going to say Izzy Romero. It wasn't a title, so not a title fight.
Was it? I don't remember. Yeah, I don't remember.
Let's look at this.
I do remember him in the machine. I want to say it was 244 because I think it was there.
But what I think more than that, and I could be wrong, but has any backup fighter who's made weight ever actually fought?
I don't know.
I mean, people bring up the Joe Soto one all the time, but he wasn't like
Joe Soto was on the card. He was on the card.
Yeah, he was supposed to fight somebody else.
He was not scheduled.
So by having Manel Cape on the card has an official backup means the fight's happening. Figgy versus Moreno is happening. Because, like, as far as I remember, like, anytime they have a backup, an actual scheduled backup, it's the main event's always been fine.
Cannoneer, we got ourselves a UFC 248. So it was Izzy and Romero. So he probably would have gotten a better fight if Cannoneer had stepped in for one of those gentlemen. But it does set a bit of a strange precedent to have newcomers come in and get that, be so close to a title fight. Because when you think about how hard and how some of these guys have to compete who are already in the UFC to try and get a title shot and how long they've been there, it's a little bit, I think, discouraging, I would think, to see someone can just come in for their first fight and just through happenstance get a title shot. And I'm like 12-6 in the UFC and like I've never had one.
It don't matter if you're 12-6. That means you lost six times, man. Like,
oh,
this is Manel Cape. Like these fights outside the UFC don't matter, man. Like, come on.
Crazy. Well, it's awesome. No, that's a good thing.
Cape was in town, going to be in the following week. So it makes sense.
Yeah,
Chandler was just there solely for that fight.
What I'm saying is I wish they would just be more aggressive. And we all agree on this, with scheduling backup fighters and paying them. Backup fighters and pay them their show money. Just if they successfully weigh in, boom, that's your show money. And everything else, again, everything else taken care of, you know, that you would normally take care of for a fighter coming in. So it shouldn't be at any expense to the replacement. It should just be gravy for the replacement, outside of the fact that obviously they have to take a title fight under less than ideal circumstances. But yes, I just wish it wasn't. It just looks weird when it's two of the biggest ones this year are new guys who have never fought in the UFC. But I think if it was something they did more frequently with other fighters, it wouldn't be an issue at all.
Yeah, it's because just looking at the rankings right now, Moreno's number one, Benavidez is number two. That's not going to happen. Askar Askarov probably isn't in the country, so that's no. Alex Perez just fought for the title. He's at four. Pantoja's not in the UFC anymore. Brandon Royval is number six. He just lost to Moreno, and he hurt his shoulder, so he's probably not even cleared to fight. So the next one in line would be Rogerio Bontorin in terms of the rankings. So, and then there's Kai Kara France, Matt Schnell. I mean, it's got to be Manel Cape.
Yeah.
Just process elimination, where we're at in this crazy world, him being in the US already. It just, there's, I just don't think there's anybody else.
And it's just smart promotion too, because it's unlikely Manel Capo actually fight in that main event. But now it gives fans and media a chance to talk about Manel Capo, get people excited about him, just know more about him, and which I feel most fans still. Well, he hasn't fought in a year now. You know, he hasn't fought since his title win in Ryzen last year. Yeah, I think it's the best option, and it's a smart promotional move by the UFC.
I got to tell you, when I put that tweet out, there was a lot of excitement around that. People were like, whoa, this is awesome. So it's good to see that people, A, know who Manel Capo is, and B, if they didn't before, I don't know if they watched like interviews or just like went back and saw that he signed, and they went back and watched old fights and realized that this dude is serious.
You know what confuses me about Manel Capo in a good way? I think you've interviewed a couple of times, and I'm like, he's kind of a calm, quiet guy. But man, if you watch him fight or the weigh-ins, dude, he is like Mr. Intensity. He's just like he wants to fight everyone in the building. You know, he's just like punching fire extinguishers, like running through walls. I mean, he's like, so like, but like in his off time when he's not fight week, man, he's just a chill dude. I love that part about all the personalities in this sport.
Yeah,
he got pretty fired up the last time I talked to him. He was on point. Unfortunately, the fight got canceled. But and AK still thought it was a slip up. I don't think so. Calling Cody Garbage, and saying it like with all seriousness was one of my favorite lines of the entire year on What the Heck. Yeah, I'll fight Cody Garbage. I loved. I was like, this is great.
Manel Capo versus Cody Garbrandt. Oh, that was close. It's so close. Oh man, get Manel Capo in the cage.
256 is a good card. It's a really, really good card. You got the title fight. Tony Ferguson versus Charles Oliveira is ridiculous.
Mike
Hanato Moicano versus Rafael Fiziev.
Mike.
Good God.
How many fights dropped out just today? That's
Well, look, it's a card. I believe it's a 14 fight card next week. So they've stored enough chestnuts away for the winner. 13. Let's put it that way. 13. So we can take a hit.
Jillian Robertson and Andrew Lee is off.
Oh, yeah. Sorry. Thank you. I'm looking at Wikipedia right now.
The hits are coming in now.
And they might. And look, and this might be the case for, frankly, the last two December cards, if we're being honest. Something has gone up. I don't know if something has changed the protocol or not. Or if people are just being less careful. I don't know. But we're getting a few more cancellations on these cards. It could be a winter. I don't know. Isolation is driving people a little crazy, so they're being a little more careless in that sense. Immune systems are just getting weaker again. We are talking about flu season, so there's a lot going on. So I like I said, don't be surprised if these last two cards. Yeah, we do see two or three fight cancellations. Fingers crossed. Hopefully this doesn't happen. Hopefully we complain about long cards. Hopefully everyone's healthy. Everyone stays on. But I'm just saying, if people are asking, is it possible we lose a lot of fights in the next couple of weeks? Yeah, it's actually really, really possible.
Yeah. So don't get my hopes up. I'm super excited. I'm super excited for these last 2 weeks. Mm. And I'm excited for the Bellator card this Thursday too. And like, Lima. Like I was supposed to go down to San Diego and I was going to do some videos of her, just her training and stuff. But I was like, I can't go because just the virus, and like I can't run that risk of me giving her the virus somehow or something like that, you know. So I was like, crap. So I was just like, you know, so we had this whole thing planned. I was gonna do a video of her dogs and everything, and her swimming and stuff. I was like, I had to be responsible.
That's a big fight. That's a big her and Velasquez. That's the most highly anticipated fight of her title fight of her career. And that's a good place to be when you're on your. I think this is her fifth title defense. That's a good place to be when you keep building interest like that. I don't know where she goes after this because Velasquez is the clear number one contender and probably has been for a while. But it's great that they finally got this fight together. And fingers crossed, it stays, and we see that on Thursday.
And if she beats Velasquez, Velasquez or Velasquez? Velasquez? Yeah.
I just say Velasquez.
Velasquez. If she beats Velasquez, then I think just the conversation about Alima is going to be just more fun to talk about because, you know, you're going to get the Shevchenko things and everything. So I think if she defeats Velasquez, it's going to be just fun in the women's flyweight division.
I spoke to her the other day, and I mostly jokingly said, look, again, there's no strawweight or bantamweight division, unfortunately, in Bellator. She would like to go up to 135 eventually, if that's a possibility. But I said, how about would you go up one more division? The two biggest women stars in Bellator, you and Cyborg. And her response was literally, she said, do you want me to die? So I do. I do not think we'll be seeing Leigh McFarlane versus Chris Cyborg super fight anytime soon. So there you go. There's your update if anyone wants to know.
Isn't it refreshing for a fighter to say they're not invincible? Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Not like talk up this fight that you know is not going to happen. Like, yeah. No, she knows. It was a bit of a silly question, and obviously she answered as such. So you respect that.
Got anything else? We could probably take like one more. Juicy.
I like this question actually. Where did we go?
Who do you think improved more from their last fight, Izzy or Marvin?
From Izzy versus Marvin.
I'm assuming the talk when they originally fought. Yeah. I thought Izzy always said a great thing. Like I think during that fight week, he said, "If you want to beat me, you better fight me last week or something like that, because I'm only getting better." And I wondered that about now. I'm thinking about Marvin though, because I didn't think Marvin was going to win tonight, but he clearly is a smarter, just more well-rounded, better fighter. So I actually don't know the answer to this.
I mean, I think by default Izzy wins, just because, I mean, look at the competition that Izzy's beaten. And like he has gotten better each and every fight. Like people poo-poo the Romero fight, but I mean that's just a stylistic kind of a nightmare.
Yeah.
Because you can't go in there and like do what you did to Costa, to Romero, because you put yourself in some serious jeopardy. But I think a lot of people picked Izzy to beat Paulo Costa, but I don't know if anybody picked Izzy. I mean, besides Izzy himself, Izzy pretty much guaranteed, like, I'm going to go in there and just blast this dude. It ain't going to be close. It's not even going to be competitive at all. And there are a lot of people who thought Paulo Costa had a really good chance of winning that fight. And Izzy just looked, I mean, he pitched a perfect game. And we've seen Vettori get finishes, but we haven't seen Vettori just go out there and just annihilate somebody in the top five like that. I mean, that's just unfair. That was just unfair to watch. Vettori has improved a lot, though. No doubt about it.
Yeah. I think the case for Vettori would be, it is difficult to gauge. We've seen Izzy quite a few more times than we have Vettori, so we can kind of gauge how much it's improved a bit more. I think that the thing is, the case for Vettori would be how much of a finished product was Adesanya by the time he made it to the UFC, because he was, he was 11-0. So, you know, still not a ton of experience, but plus the kickboxing. So I think, so as how different is he from the first time we saw him? Again, I probably would lean towards Adesanya as well, but I understand why the question is posed, because Vettori, again, from that loss, has looked very good since, has shown a few more aspects of his game. It's funny, he has good submission skills, but it's still kind of perceived as a striker, but he got to show the submission skills against Carl Roberson, and then he got to show a lot of the striking tonight against Jack Hermanson. So I think it's closer maybe than what we're saying, but Adesanya, yeah, you got to give him the edge. He's had the benefit of just the level of competition just keeps getting higher and higher and higher and higher. So iron sharpens iron. I have to imagine, even though maybe it's been more incremental because we've seen Izzy fight more, but I would go with Izzy. But yeah, Vettori for sure. Since that first fight, that maturity is just you can't put a price on maturity, and he's showing it a lot as he goes his age 27, 28 years. So yeah, good stuff. But yeah, great question.
I've said this a few times before. I think the fact that Vettori fought Izzy the time he fought him was like the best thing that could have happened to him, because Izzy came in talking that greasiness, as Jose Youngs likes to say, and you could tell it got to Marvin. I mean, it definitely did, and it gets to a lot of people, because Izzy's he's just so good with the verbal warfare. He could beat guys before he get in the octagon. Did the same thing with Paulo Costa. I mean, he was in Paulo's head like right off the jump, like just the things that they said back and forth, and Izzy just so confident, just shrugged it all off. Like he's just so good like that. And like we've seen Conor do that to guys as well. So I'm probably to Poirier the first time around. Jose Aldo. I mean, that's a prime example. Eddie Alvarez too. Like But now Vettori's been there before. He's seen it. It'd be very interesting. I mean, you know, Izzy's going to turn that dial up to like 1,000 if they fight again. But Vettori's seen it already. So that rematch becomes even more interesting because of the mental approach to the fight as well.
Yeah, there's a lot of heat for that rematch, which again, after their first fight, I don't know if I would have said that. I mean, it was a good fight, but I don't know if anyone after was clamoring for like, oh, I can't wait to see these two fight again. But they've certainly, again, they've both taken care of business, and Vettori has definitely done his part. So yeah, that's a marketable rematch for sure.
I think Vettori is just missing that. He needs that one big knockout though. Like, you know, because unfortunately he's going to have decisions, but if he keeps winning, just if the storyline alone, the rematch, and just Vettori just isn't afraid to, you know, just say whatever he wants on the mic. So, but I want to toot my own horn real quick. Look at this. Can you read that?
Oh my gosh. Wait, was that? No. Oh, this is your, I thought it was tonight. I thought you
were. No. These are all my picks for Untappology of Izzy throughout his span in the UFC.
Yeah, and three perfects in there.
And look at his last fight. Against Costa. Uh-huh. Perfecto. Sure.
Wow.
You've done it a couple of times.
Great. Yeah.
Casey, you're great. We know this.
I know. Who won the picks tonight?
Jason Herzog. Not said me. You were one of the Casey did win our picks tonight. And Jason Herzog said you're one of the greatest, Casey. I'm not gonna argue with him. So
yeah, Jason he's never been wrong. That's kind of his thing. No. He's literally never been wrong. Mm-hmm. All right.
Sometimes I just pick with strategery. So, like, I picked Jose Quinones to beat Luis Smolka. I still thought, and I even said it to Casey, like, during the fight, I think Quinones is the better fighter, but he's chinny as hell. But Smolka just, as soon as he got into the mat, very opportunistic and just thumped on him. Smolka looked great tonight.
That takedown to kind of judo hip awesome. Throw to right straight to mount, and like, oh, my goodness. Like, cause at the beginning of that fight, I thought Smolka didn't look too good at the beginning, like, at least the first half round. But, man, for a throwaway fight night, we talked an hour and a half, guys.
Well, I think we had to make up for some of the lost. You know, this is for the lack of fights. I honestly thought there was a chance that tonight's show was going to get canceled. And I think we would have just hopped on and said, we're going to do like a 3 or 4 hour show, right? Like live chat. Like I would have done it. Honestly, I would have done it. To talk about the fights that should have happened. We could have predicted, here's how this fight would have gone if it had happened. And we'll talk about some matchmaking, give a little on to the next one preview, things like that. So we would have been here for you. If there was no fight card tonight, thank goodness it did not get canceled. But if it had been, we would have been here for you.
We would have done like an Errol Spence watch along or something. OnlyFans.com/CandyLee.
No, I'm not allowed to do that. Candy Lee with a K. Don't get me fired.
You didn't, I did.
It doesn't matter. Vox Media, Vox Overlords. John Legend. John Legend is part of our committee, by the way. John Legend, I apologize. I did not tell you about OnlyFans.
Fair enough. You can find the musical stylings of AK on to the next one, which will drop sometime tomorrow. At worst, you'll get it Monday morning. So make sure you subscribe to the podcast network and never miss an episode. With that being said, UFC Vegas 16 is in the books. It is now, as Bill Belichick would say, paraphrasing him, it's on to UFC 256 coming up. Now it's Sunday, this coming Saturday night at the Apex, headlined by Davis Figueiredo versus Brandon Moreno. Should be a hell of a card. Lots about that card coming up throughout the week. But for the meantime, we are out of here. For Casey Lydon, for Alex K. Lee, I am Mike Heck. Good night, everybody.
Thanks, viewers. You guys are the best.
You're listening to the Vox Media Podcast Network.
The NBA playoffs are heating up, and so is the action at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NBA. DraftKings brings you same-game parlays, live betting, odds boosts, and so much more. You can download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now and use code VOXMMA. That's code VOXMMA for new customers to get $150 in bonus bets when you bet just $5. Only on DraftKings. The crown is yours.
Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Or in West Virginia, visit 1-800-GAMBLER.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly. On behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort in Kansas, 21 and over, age varies by jurisdiction. Void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.co/bball for eligibility and deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources.
Hey, this is Scott Galloway, author, professor, entrepreneur, and most importantly, host of the Prop G podcast. We got a special series running on right now called The Future of Work, where I answer all your questions on, surprise, the future of work. Questions including, what are we missing when we work remotely? Or how do we handle work-life balance when a major opportunity comes knocking? From the provocative to the technical, we're offering insights you won't want to miss. So tune in to The Future of Work, a Prop G Pod special sponsored by Canva. You can find it on the Prop G Pod wherever you get your podcasts.